Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. And that is the intro I usually do. I'm very proud of myself. My guest this time around is a repeat guest who previously was here to talk about an Enterprise episode. Are we talking about Enterprise again? You'll find out. Well, you probably already know because you saw the title of this podcast. Aaron Reynolds joins me. Aaron, thank you for joining me.
Hi, thanks for having me. I was so excited to come on your show the first time around, and I like Enterprise, so I was happy to get an Enterprise episode, but then we still had to get an outrageously bad episode of Enterprise.
Very bad episode of Enterprise. But we're not talking about Enterprise, but before we get to what we're going to talk about, why don't we talk about you? So why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself?
My God. I quit my job to be funny on the internet all the time, which is pretty great.
That is great.
Yeah, it was very scary, and there was a lot of like, how many jokes do I have to make every day to pay my mortgage? You know, is this sustainable? Is this a thing I can do?
How many jokes a day do you have to make to pay your mortgage?
Approximately six.
That's a lot of jokes.
I write six jokes every day. That's a lot of, and I don't write every day. So what I really do is I write like 20 odd jokes every third day, something like that.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, because you can't be funny all the time.
No, I can hardly ever be funny, so I'm not quitting my job. I know, but so, you're known for a variety of Twitter accounts that you have.
Yes, the most successful things have been Swear Trek, where I rewrite the dialogue for episodes of Swear Trek, sort of episodes of Star Trek, and I make them, you know, less polite, and
slightly,
and a lot more about my own internal monologue and what's bothering me in my life. Mm-hmm. And then Effin' Birds, which is actually very much along the same lines, except not with Star Trek, but with beautiful woodcuts of birds expressing frustration at, you know, at the world, the universe.
As well they
raging against the people who have wronged me, which is like, yeah, there's been a lot.
You're a very angry man.
I'm spiteful. Somebody earlier today that they seem to have monetized spite. I was like, yeah, that sounds like me.
It is one of the most powerful of emotions.
Oh yeah, gets me to do anything.
And it's, you know, you're successful because now your comedy is branching off of the internet and into the most comedic form, which is a book.
Bookstores everywhere will be invaded by the Effin' Birds book. It's called Effin' Birds: A Field Guide to Identification, and it comes out in October 15th.
Oh, well, look for that at a retail location near you.
Yes.
Or somewhere on the internet. I'm sure you can buy it.
Two of the big players have it on sale for $12, which really surprised me because it's not out yet. They're trying to vacuum up all my pre-orders. And, I mean, that's fine. I'll take it.
Hey, why not? The episode that we're going to talk about is Ethics, which is a Next Generation episode, not an Enterprise episode. Season 5, episode 16, I want to say. Yes.
Yep, that sounds right. It was one, actually, like, I really clearly remember that episode. It was an episode that, as soon as you said Ethics, I was like, is that the one where the barrel falls on Worf? And then as I'm watching it, I'm like, I know, like, every beat of this episode.
Mm-hmm. This is, so before we continue, I do want to, for people who haven't seen this episode, it does deal with suicide, which is a big topic for many people. Obviously, it should be. So if you don't want to hear us talking about it, you should stop listening to this episode. And also, if you are struggling with suicidal thoughts, just remember that you are not alone, and I will have a link in the show description to some resources that you could go find to help you with that, because I know it's a serious topic, and we are going to make fun of this episode, but we are not making fun of suicide in any shape or size. So just want to put that out there, because it's a serious topic, but there you go. Now, let's talk about Star Trek. And make fun of stuff. TNG, what are your thoughts about TNG?
Well, I love TNG. It is, I think my formative Star Treks, because of the age that I am, are the original cast movies. Mm-hmm. I have a very special place in my heart for like 2, 3, 4. And I remember the VHS tape of, I'm going to say 4, having an ad at the beginning of it that there was a new Star Trek TV series coming. And it blew my, I'm going to say, 12-year-old mind, because that's about how old I was, I think. And we like, as a teenager, that was a show that we organized viewing parties around. So, you know, it was big deal television after the first season, which was a little bit rough.
Yeah, first season, not good.
Well, you know what? That's the thing. First season, you got to find your legs. And I think that one thing I do want to talk about in this episode, which we will talk about way later, is how important it is that this episode happens in the fifth season. Because mm-hmm. there's a lot of the way that they play it that can only happen in a show that is so confident in its characters.
Yes. And the thing that I find so interesting about TNG is it's also my favorite Star Trek series because it is the one I grew up with. So I have a very soft spot for it. Is that if you look at the first season to the seventh season, the characters haven't grown a whole lot because it was, you know, syndicated. And so it's very episodic. So they don't do a lot of story arcs. Right. But like you said, the actors and the writers are so much more confident in who these characters are and what their relationships are. And they were there at the beginning, but they just kind of grew into them that it really is amazing to see where they went from season one to season seven, even though the characters pretty much are the same, but the relationships are so much stronger.
I think that TNG was early in the kind of show that started to break out a little bit from the rule of reset everybody to zero by the end of the episode,
slightly.
I mean, we spent the time to go see, you know, Picard's vineyard.
Well, yeah, that is what I was thinking about when Picard turns into Locutus of Borg and then he comes back. They spend some time thinking about what the repercussions of that are. Now, if it were a modern show, they would that would have been a whole season.
Right. That would have been a season long story arc. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've sort of, you know, the age of peak TV it's maybe gone too far in the other direction. You know, mm-hmm. there's something to be said for a show that you can just watch an episode of.
I totally agree.
Yeah. But, you know, at the same time, I love especially the second season of Discovery. So, you know, I'm good with that.
I think there's a place for both of them. I do wish that TNG did a little more, but it just wasn't of that time, did a little more story arcs, but it just wasn't what they did. So I can't fault them for that because nobody was doing it, really.
Yeah, exactly. Except unless you were Dynasty.
That's right. Why can't Star Trek be more like Dynasty? That's what I've been saying for years.
Can you imagine an executive trying to pitch that, getting thrown out of the room?
It's like Dynasty in space.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Sold.
We got a lot of shows like that now.
That's true. It's a very popular format. But this is the episode. Well, let's just delve into Ethics, which is an episode, an apt title for this episode in many ways, mm-hmm. because this episode kind of breaks with the normal A plot, B plot. There's a very small B plot in this, in which Dr. Crusher does not approve of the visiting doctor's medical methods, but that's such a slight, I mean, it's important because it's a big part of the story, but it's not a huge B plot.
It's only there to give you information about the visiting doctor.
Yes. Dr. Russell, I think is her name.
I wrote down Dr. Luce Cannon and later I wrote, what else did I write about her? Oh, I'll bring that up later. But yeah, Dr. Luce Cannon. I don't actually remember what her character's name is.
Toby Russell is
Toby Russell. Yes, Toby. That's it. Yes.
And she's ready to practice medicine no matter what's happening.
These ethical constraints are holding you back.
That's right, you fool. Although she does have a point in this episode. But anyway, so we start off, we see Worf and Geordi talking about how Geordi cheats at cards, apparently.
I love that in an episode that doesn't open with poker, we still have poker.
Yes, and I thought, Geordi, you're giving away all your secrets. Don't tell Worf that you're cheating.
I also really liked Worf's inability to figure out if somebody's bluffing or not because he didn't think it was particularly honorable. And I was like, yeah, that's why Worf loses at cards.
Yes, that's why they keep inviting Worf back to play poker.
He's the mark. That's right.
But that doesn't matter. They're looking for some strange reading or something. And turns out they store these giant barrels that are, I assume, heavy, but they look really light. And one falls down and hits Worf in the back. And he's wakes up and he's in sick bay. And Dr. Crusher tells him that his spinal cord has been crushed by the styrofoam barrel, because, fun fact, Klingon spines apparently are very brittle, and he's been paralyzed.
And you know what I like about that is it's turning the idea on its head that Worf is there to demonstrate how dangerous the situation is, because Worf usually gets like thrown across the room by something or beat up by something, or, you know, the tough guy has to get beat up by something. So, you know, it's a real dangerous thing. Mm-hmm. And, this time around, you know, the barrel falls on Worf and, you know, here we are all waiting to say, oh yeah, it's just to show that the barrels are dangerous. Okay. Explain to me how this works in the plot. But in this time, there are actually consequences.
Yes. Worf is, not happy to have his back broken. I don't know who would be. And shout out, the USS Patinkin shows up, which is, I believe, an Excelsior class. Yes, it is an Excelsior class starship. My favorite kind of starship. So I was excited to see that because I, surprising no one, I host a Star Trek podcast and I'm a giant nerd.
Do you have one of the little like riding crops that the captain of the Excelsior had? Do you have one of those?
I wish I had one of those. That is one of my favorite parts of that movie is the fact that he has that ridiculous riding crop that he walks around with.
He's such a jackass. I love him so much. I want to write a whole like bunch of fan fiction about the captain of the Excelsior.
It's such a great
smug crew.
Yeah, he's like, oh, they won't get away from me. Let's go. And then, of course, I won't ruin the joke. But of course, if you're listening to this, you've seen that movie. But whatever. So sadly, the USS Patinkin doesn't really, it's just there to bring Dr. Russell. We don't see it much more. She is here. She is apparently a neurological specialist who Dr. Crusher's called in because Dr. Crusher doesn't know what to do with the Klingon. And this is, we learned some fun facts about Klingon medicine in that usually if you have this kind of injury, you kill yourself as a Klingon. And so yes. The Klingons have decided it's not worth researching, so nobody really knows how the Klingon nervous system works.
I thought that was a pretty, like, that's a dodge for the end of the episode working out, mm-hmm. but it's also totally in line with the Klingons. Like, I bought it. I immediately bought it. I was like, yeah, of course Klingons don't do medical research. Of course not. They let hurt people die. That's how they go.
And it made me think, it must be very sad to be a Klingon doctor because if someone has a cold, ritual suicide is the prescription.
Yeah. See, they're like Archer's defense lawyer. When he goes on the Klingon planet on trial, he's just
exactly.
Like, I'm just here to read the words. So he had a defense lawyer. Okay, bye.
So you want me to actually do some work? Forget about exactly.
I don't actually defend you. I'm here to let you get killed or, you know, whatever.
It does make me think that Klingon society is not highly functional.
No. Although, you know what? This series, TNG, gave us the great gift of expanding the Klingons and making them interesting characters.
Yes. I agree. Well, Ronald Moore, this is who wrote this episode, is obsessed with Klingons. So he is, that is all him. He is, I think, I would wager to guess 60% of what we know and love about Klingons is because of Ronald D. Moore.
Yeah. Before him, they were angry dudes that sometimes had bumps on their head and sometimes did not.
Sometimes they were just, and in the original series, they were just angry, swarthy gentlemen who had sashes.
And really terrible fake mustaches.
Yes. But yeah, they've really expanded, although still their society, I question how it works, but that's fine. So yeah, Dr. Crusher's like, hey, you're a research doctor. You know a lot about nerves. So come and help fix our broken Klingon.
You know a lot about nerves.
It's true, right?
Yeah, it's true. She does.
And this is, okay. So then they talk a little bit about how ridiculous Klingon anatomy is, which, you know, this also sets up for the end of the episode, right? There's lots of redundant systems. They have 8 chambered hearts, 23 ribs, a bunch of livers. They're like, you know, 85%
liver. They need all those
liver.
Livers for the blood wine. Yeah.
Exactly. And this, so Worf is basically, he is ashamed of the manner in which he got this injury, right? Because it was basically like a workplace accident. It's not an honorable injury. And he's been paralyzed, so he can no longer be a warrior, I assume. So he doesn't want to live his life anymore. And so Riker kind of visits and he's like, you know, if Commander Riker, he's one of my favorite characters just because he's like, hey, Worf, I'm here to check up on you. How are you? Like, you can imagine him doing like finger pistols. How are you, Worf?
Yep.
And Worf's like, hey, Riker, I want you to do something for me. And I like Jonathan Frakes is a good actor. I like in that moment, he gets super serious and he says, like, anything. I'll do anything for you, Worf.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I've seen this episode several times, but I thought to myself, Riker, before you agree to do anything Worf asks you to do, think about who you're talking to.
Yeah. There's going to be pain sticks or something.
Exactly. It's not good. Yeah. It's going to be bad.
Klingon favors always are bad.
Yes. It turns out this one is pretty bad because Worf basically says, hey, could you help me with this ritual? And Riker's like, tell me more. I find Klingon rituals quite interesting. And Worf says, well, you see, I'm injured, so I want to kill myself, and I'd like you to do that for me. Riker, not on board with this.
No. I like that the little, like, there are two, well, I mean, one of them's coming up, another one's a little bit later, but there are these two conversations where Crusher doesn't want to do something, and Riker doesn't want to do something, and they both have really good reasons to not want to do those things, mm-hmm. and Picard has to be the person to come in and say, like, yes, from your perspective, these things are wrong. Please look at it from other perspectives. And it's almost like he's the only person who understands a Klingon, but I don't think it's that, because I don't remember where we are in the storyline. Has Frakes been on a Klingon ship at this point? Was that
I think.
So, you know, I'm sure he understands the Klingons, but he just doesn't, like, he doesn't want to do this. And so I like that those two hard conversations, like, that's the captain's job right there. And I also like that Picard is hardly in this episode other than those conversations.
Yeah, and his two scenes, well, he may be in a couple more scenes, but those two scenes in particular are very good because immediately after Riker talks to Worf, he goes to talk to Picard and he's like, hey, Captain Picard, Worf wants me to kill him. And I don't, or he doesn't, he wants me to help him kill himself.
And I don't want to do this.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's when, as you said, Picard almost, you know, I'm of two minds, right? He's respecting the Klingon society and culture and saying, listen, we're humans. We can't really understand how they deal with it. We may not agree with it. We may not even understand it. But Klingons choose their friends carefully. And if Worf has chosen you to do this, then he clearly values your friendship. So I can't tell you what to do. But just keep that in mind, which I think is really good advice, right? He's not saying, listen, Riker, just do it or don't do it. He's kind of giving it context, which I think is really mature, and that's why you turn to Captain Picard, because he will tell you, he'll either tell you what to do if it's clear cut, or he'll say, listen, follow your heart.
Here's the perspective. Yeah,
exactly. And then Riker then goes off to follow his heart. A spoiler alert for this episode, Worf doesn't die at the end, so
yeah, he spun off onto another series. You know he's going to be fine.
He'll be fine, but it is a very interesting episode. And meanwhile, while that's happening, Captain Dr. Crusher is talking to Dr. Russell, and we quickly find out that Dr. Russell has this newfangled, some kind of like an organ replicator or something that she's very excited about. And she's done holographic tests, and she's like,
and it has never been trialed on humanoids.
That's right. She's very excited. She thinks this will solve Worf's problem, because Worf doesn't want to use, they have like these little like anklets or something that you can put on your legs, and it'll give you like 60% of your motion back, and Worf doesn't want that. He'd rather die. And she says, well, I can just, why don't we just replace his spine from scratch? And Dr. Crusher's like, that's crazy pants. Which kind of is, especially since neither of them know anything about Klingon anatomy. Seems like that's an extra level. If you have your experimental thing that you've never tried on anyone, why don't we try it on a humanoid that I know nothing about?
Sure.
Seems
that sounds
fine.
Like there are no pitfalls to this plan.
No.
No downside here.
And I forgot, there is a kind of another part of this B-plot, which is there was an accident and they need to go pick up 500 colonists. The only reason they have this 500 colonists, they beam them aboard, they're all injured. Dr. Crusher and Dr. Russell have had this big fight about, Dr. Russell basically is like, listen, he may die, he's gonna die anyway, so why don't you let me try this on him?
Right.
And Dr. Crusher is not on board with it, but then they have to run off to help some of these colonists, and Dr. Russell says, listen, Dr. Crusher, basically, I'm a doctor, do you need an extra set of hands? And Dr. Crusher says, yes, we do.
And I actually I loved that moment, because it was like, we're having a professional disagreement, mm-hmm. but you're another doctor. Absolutely, I can use your help. Yes. You know, that was really like, it was showing the good side of Dr. Crusher. By the way, I want to call out this B plot for a second, for having won the award for, I think, the most generic Star Trek B plot, which is transport struck by a gravitic mine. That's what I wrote down in my notebook. Yep. Like, I swear I've heard those exact words at least three times in Star Trek. Transport struck by a gravitic mine. Isn't that what happens to the Kobayashi Maru? Like,
they're just disabled.
A gravitic mine. No, we've struck a gravitic mine. That's the line.
Oh yes, there you go.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm a big fan of this B plot because it gives us a look at a bunch of extras dressed in future spacewear.
Yeah,
which is always fun to see.
Shiny clothes. They also had some really disgusting, genuinely disgusting prosthetics, like to show their burns and whatever else. And you know, I was watching it in high definition. I don't think I'd ever seen this episode in HD before, and I was like, "Oh, this is genuinely gross."
It was. I had that moment too, where I was like, "This is pretty gross." Now, the whole point of this, though, is to get Dr. Russell and Dr. Crusher in a cargo bay full of a bunch of injured people, and then Dr. Crusher looks up and sees Dr. Russell scanning a corpse who was moments before not a corpse, and Dr. Crusher's like, "Oh, what happened?" And Dr. Russell says, "Oh, he wasn't, his blood pressure was too high or something, so I couldn't use the normal drug." And Dr. Crusher said, "Oh, you just used the secondary thing and it didn't work." And Dr. Russell says, "No, I used this experimental thing that I kind of had, you know, kicking on my notes just to see if it would work."
And I recognize that this is to tell us that she is absolutely like, and she has a reckless disregard for life, or not necessarily a reckless disregard for life, but a willingness to jeopardize someone's life for the sake of research, if that's a shortcut for her. And I get that. It was just that I just found that moment to be slightly too outrageous. But I also get that we have to tell this story in, 45 minutes. So,
Yeah, it seemed like a bit much to me. But, and she basically says, he was going to die anyway, so his death will save possibly thousands of people if this works out. And Dr. Crusher says, well, if you'd done the normal thing, he probably wouldn't have died. And Dr. Russell's like, whatever. Who knows?
No way to know for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no way to know. And this episode also reminds me of, child actors, good Lord, they're often not good. And Alexander Rashenko, who is Worf's son, I'm sure the actor who played him is a lovely person. But in this episode, he doesn't really do a great job.
He's the kid from Family Ties.
Is he the kid? Oh, yes, he is.
He's the little kid from Family Ties.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Well,
he had one really good scene towards the end. The scene where he cries, I thought was fantastic. I mean, and I was like, oh, that's the reason this kid's a child actor, because he can do that.
He can cry on demand.
Yeah, exactly. The rest of it's kind of like, eh, but the crying on demand, he nailed it.
Yes, Worf doesn't want to see him because he doesn't want Alexander to see him like this, and everybody's upset, and finally he sees Alexander, and Alexander's like, oh, what's wrong? And it doesn't really matter. But they're setting that up so that Worf will realize, they're setting it up for this scene where Riker comes in and says, hey, Worf, I'm going to skip over a couple things, but he's like, hey, Worf, I've Googled this Klingon ritual, and it turns out that I am, this is actually a really good scene because they fight, right? Worf says, basically, you have to help me, and Riker's like, no, I'm not going to help you, and it's all very intense, and they're arguing, and I liked it. And at the end, he's like, basically, I can't anyway, because according to Klingon tradition, your firstborn son, or blood relation, but you happen to have a son, has to do it, so I can't do it. Ha-ha!
I thought a particularly good dodge. Like, that was a way for Riker to not say no, because I don't think that he would. I think he would do everything in his power to not participate in it, but he would not refuse. But, like, to make it instead much harder, a much harder choice for Worf. I like that. I like that way of doing things.
Yes. And then there's a scene where Alexander comes in and you think, oh no, Worf is just going to have Alexander kill him, but he doesn't. That would have been a bold story choice, though.
I have a question. Do you think that Brian Bonsall, who played Alexander, do you think he hangs out with, like, Jake Lloyd? Do you think they have a lot to talk about?
I don't know. I would imagine that they would. They have a similar upbringing, although I think Jake Lloyd probably took a lot more heat than he did as true, Alexander.
Because there was not so much internet back when Star Trek TNG.
Oh, man. I feel bad for him. But and I will say that, you know, child actors nowadays are far better. And good for them, because the internet would just, well, I'm sure it rip does rip them apart anyway, but yep. It rips everyone to shreds. It's very sad. Except for the people who listen to this podcast. You're the best people in the world. Rate us on iTunes.
You guys are nice. The rest of the internet sucks.
That's right. Those bastards. And this is when, let's see what else happens. Yes, proceed. There's more talk about, there's a scene where Dr. Crusher and Dr. Russell talk to Worf and say, here's basically, we've got these little neuro servo thingies we can put on your legs and he'll let you stand up. And Dr. Crusher, thinking that they had previously agreed not to bring up the experimental spine replacement operation, is surprised, although I don't know why she would be surprised, when Dr. Russell says, oh, if you don't want to do that, BT Dubs, I can replicate you a new spine if you'd be up for it. I mean, I don't want to tell you what to do, but it'll cure you 100%.
You know what? I do appreciate that Dr. Crusher is professional enough to not yell at Dr. Loose Cannon until they are in the next room away from the patient.
It is. Now, here, the title of this episode, Ethics, is very apt, because I do kind of feel like, even though Dr. Loose Cannon is a loose cannon, in this very particular framework, she is right, because Worf has clearly stated that he is just going to kill himself and or be miserable for the rest of his life. And so you might as well try this experimental thing that he may die, but if he doesn't, then he may be fine. And that is the scene in which Captain Picard comes and says basically that thing to Dr. Crusher.
Yep. Well, this is one of the many great Star Trek episodes where no one is genuinely a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There are some people who make some, I mean, she makes some questionable decisions, but she does have like a positive intention. She's not a mad scientist,
right?
You know, bent on destroying the universe or something like that. She literally wants to save thousands of people who are going through the same thing. And to do it, she needs to do what Dr. Crusher says, which is spend a long time doing research, or she needs to do it on a live person who's willing to have it done. And she's chosen option B because she wants the glory within her lifetime or something like that.
And she doesn't like paperwork, I think, is what it really comes down. Yeah. She's like, we can't let these bureaucrats keep us from solving these problems.
Oh my God, Starfleet medical paperwork. It must be the worst.
I assume it's lots and lots. And there's a scene where Dr. Crusher says, hey, I did some looking up into your past. Now, once again, you know, Dr. Crusher says, oh, I need a neurologist. Send me one. And they send Dr. Russell. Apparently, Dr. Crusher did no research on Dr. Russell before she showed up. But now that she's here, Dr. Crusher has Googled her and has found out that three times she's attempted to get the okay from Starfleet Medical to do tests of this procedure on humanoids. And three times Starfleet Medical has said, no, you need to do more research before we'll let you do it.
Well, to be fair, you wouldn't put that in your bio.
I guess that's true.
Right.
Loves reckless medical decisions.
Known for. Yes.
That's right. Research on the sly. But you're right. She does. She's not motivated by, well, she might be a little bit motivated by wanting to be the person who solves this and has this big breakthrough. But I kind of feel like all doctors are a little motivated by this God complex that they are helping people, you know, saving them,
sure.
Which is not a bad thing because they do great work. So,
well, that's it. And I think that, you know, ultimately in this episode, I mean, spoiler for the end of this episode, but I mean, Worf does walk again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a combination of her crazy, you know, experiment and unknown aspects of Klingon physiology. But I mean, it's once again, you know, it was ethically very dubious to do, and yet it was the right thing to do.
Yes, the ends
to get the outcome, at least. Yeah,
justify the means is what we learned from this episode. Now, so Worf has a decision to make, right? He has to say, okay, do I try this experimental thing or do I kill myself by letting my son hand me the blade that I will plunge into my heart as he watches? Now, when you lay it out like that, seems like a fairly simple decision.
Yeah, but we're not Klingons. We're not Klingons.
Captain Picard
is like the only person in this whole ship who doesn't want Worf to act like a human instead of a Klingon. He's a Klingon. He's going to Klingon. That's how he is, you know?
Captain Picard is very cognizant of diversity and inclusivity, and he says we must respect his culture. Let's not try to pigeonhole him into what we think he should do. So 3 points for Captain Picard. Worf chooses for the experimental operation. But before they do that, he has this nice scene with Counselor Troi where he says, hey, Counselor Troi, if I die, you know, Alexander's going to be puttering around on the Enterprise. And Counselor Troi says, oh, I'll just, you know, send him off to your parents. It'll be fine. And he says, my parents, they're super old. They cannot take care of Alexander.
You know what, though? I had that moment watching it and I was like, oh, yeah, my parents couldn't look after my kid. Something happened to us. They're old. My kids would destroy their house. They can lose their minds.
My wife and I welcomed twin baby boys 9 weeks ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And yes, if we were both to be killed because we had to have experimental spine replacement surgery, I don't know if her parents could take care of these tiny babies either. So I understand it, but it struck me as funny when he was like, they're super old. They can't take care of Alexander.
Plus, he's a Klingon. Look what they did with me.
This whole episode makes me think, so they're far in the future, and medicine doesn't seem to have been as advanced as I thought it was. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Whatever. They don't even have Wi-Fi.
That's true. And this episode also, speaking of which, we find out that Klingons have ridges in the darndest places. They have ridges on their backs. They have ridges on their feet. They have ridges on their foreheads. It's crazy. But anyway, so he says, hey, Counselor Troi, will you take Alexander as your son if I die? And Counselor Troi says, okay. She wasn't super excited about it, but she'll do it.
I wonder if that was laying groundwork for some Worf Troi stuff that sort of materialized and then never really did.
I feel like this episode, yes, they were trying to say, hey, let's see if we can get the chemistry between Worf and Troi so we can set up this will they, won't they, which never really worked. Yep. So,
no.
Yeah, it was an odd choice. But Counselor Troi, who's going to say no to that? So Counselor Troi says yes.
Of course.
This is where we get the tense scene where everyone's wearing their blood red jumpsuits and their hacking open Worf. I don't understand those uniforms.
Another scene with disgusting prosthetics.
Yes, it's gross. And they're ripping out his spine and putting in a new spine and laying like a worm into him. I don't even know what that thing is, but it was weird looking.
It was the new spine that was it needed to grow inside his body.
Oh, I see. See, I didn't understand because they had a spine like in a plexiglass case, but I guess that's his old spine that they took out.
That was his old spine. Yeah, that they were scanning.
See.
Yeah.
Now I really like this. I thought it was very tense, and I liked the fact that they intercut it with Captain Picard and Riker in Picard's ready room, like, discussing the most mundane things that we have ever seen them discuss. And because I've been in that situation where you're waiting to hear for somebody, like from a major operation of someone you love, and you still have to go to work and you still have to do stuff. And so you're like, I have to talk about the warp coil imbalance on the left nacelle. But have you heard anything from – and Picard says no. And they're really tight.
Remarkable piece of acting from both of them in that scene. Like yes. You knew – that they were not invested in these conversations. They were going through the motions and they just really were worried about their friend. And yes. It was a wonderful little scene, probably the best scene in the episode for
me. I agree. And I think that to your point earlier, that scene could not happen if this episode happened earlier in an earlier season of TNG,
right.
Because it just wouldn't have worked. But it works beautifully in this episode. And so we think, oh, they do a little fake out. They throw in the new spine. Everything looks like it's going great. And then, oh no, Worf is dead. Because the reasons he's, you know, Dr. Luz Cannon has screwed everything up and everybody hates her. But suddenly,
she was like, but my holographic projections.
And it was funny earlier in when she's doing something, she's like, oh no, the scanner is having trouble replicating the DNA on this. And Dr. Crusher says, well, have you seen that before? And she's like, oh yeah, it showed up in every test I did, but I thought I corrected for it.
I was like, oh my God.
Dr. Luz Cannon, come on.
Yeah.
What is wrong with you?
She's like, she's like the Dr. Nick of Star Trek.
She is. everybody said, Dr. Crusher says, Nurse Ogawa, let's make a note in the log, death at whatever, 1240 or something. And then this is when the darned redundancy of the Klingon anatomy helps, because I don't know, there's some kind of, he has a secondary brain or something. I don't know.
So before I watched this episode, I was trying to remember it, because I don't think I saw this one more than once. I think I saw this when it aired, and I don't think I ever saw it in reruns. And I was trying to think of how it ends, because I was like, I know something like semi-magical happens. And I was like, is it like a newt, and he grew a new tail? Did he grow his own new spine? Is that what happened? Kind of that's what happened.
Kind of. His body just kind of reboots in after using his backup brain, I guess. I don't know. And the spine is fine. Everybody's happy. Nobody really knows what happens. And if I were Dr. Russell, I think I should study Klingon anatomy, because this is amazing. But
right,
they don't. Nobody seems to care. And then there's a great, so Worf is fine. My second favorite scene in this episode is when, so we see Dr. Crusher in her office reading some kind of, you know, probably doing Starfleet medical paperwork about how Worf died for like 30 seconds, and you probably have to fill out like 14 reams of paper.
It's, you know, because you probably like lost his job when he died, and now she has to reinstate him somehow, because he's like, well, he's alive again now. So, you know.
Exactly. Make sure his benefit, like his pension doesn't reset. Yeah, and there's exactly. A lot of paperwork.
He no longer has access to the turbo lift because he died.
Alexander's been kicked out of his quarters because nobody, he doesn't exist anymore. So
doesn't have a parent in this ship. Yeah.
And so she's there, and Dr. Russell comes by to say, hey, you know, wasn't that great? I know you don't agree with my methods, but I kind of was right. And Dr. Crusher just kind of ignores her for a while, which I thought was very apropos. And Dr. Russell then says, oh, so you're just going to ignore me?
Yeah.
Which it just felt like a very natural and real scene to me. And that's when Dr. Crusher says, listen, this time you gambled with Worf's life. This time it worked out. I'm very happy that Worf's alive, but I still don't agree with your methods, which I understand.
You know, that whole monologue made me think of Theranos. You know, the idea that it could work and we're going to act like it works.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to start doing stuff as if it works. And then we're going to try to get it to work.
Exactly.
You know, like, do you know what I mean? Like that whole, like, mm-hmm. it struck me as the same kind of attitude, or the same kind of
cavalier.
Motivation.
Yeah. Like, this should work, and we'll tell you it does work, so you'll give us money so that we can make it work.
Well, that's exactly it. Or in this case, it's, we'll tell you it works so that we can try it on a human, or in this case, a Klingon, a humanoid, to find out if it does work.
Right. Because it's worked in the holodeck, so it must work in real life.
Jordy can tell you stories.
That's true. Jordy knows that. That does not always happen. Real life is not like the holodeck. And the last scene is kind of nice, right? It's Worf trying to relearn how to walk because, you know, the nerves have to restitch or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And Deanna Troi's there, and Alexander's there, and Worf stumbles while he is learning to walk, and Alexander goes to move to help, and Troy's like, oh no, Alexander, your father will want to do this himself. Don't worry. He's a tough Klingon. He does not need your help. And that's when Worf turns to him and says, no, I would like my son's help. And so it's very nice. I'm like, oh,
Worf. And the music swells. Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Hooray, Worf is not paralyzed.
And then everybody's back to normal.
And everybody's back to normal. Next episode, I'm sure, I don't even know what the next episode is, but I'm sure no one ever talks about what happened to Worf.
Do you remember that time where you couldn't walk for a really long time, and then we didn't have any episodes so that we wouldn't have to worry about that part?
Vaguely. I don't really recall this.
Yeah, if this was a modern show, he would definitely spend an entire season like learning to walk.
Yes, and there would be episodes about how he was struggling and, you know.
Yep. How hard it is for a Klingon. Yeah.
Yes. So I think that, so this episode deals with some weighty issues, and I feel like it probably... Now, I'm no expert on these issues, but I feel like it does a good job of it and kind of showing the repercussions of it and how someone could struggle with in the wake of this. What did you think of this episode?
Well, I think that it's funny because I remember when you told me this is the episode we're going to do, I was like, oh yeah, I remember that. That's a great episode. And in watching it, it's not as great as I remember. It's a little more, heavy-handed than I thought it was. But I think that's in part because we've had this conversation in a much bigger way than we had 30 odd years ago when this aired. How long ago did this air? Is it 30?
This aired in 1992.
My God, I'm so old. yeah. And so, you know, it was a conversation that I think we were culturally just really starting to have around assisted suicide.
Yep.
Also around medical ethics.
Mm-hmm.
And to have them tied together so nicely and neatly in an episode that does not try to give any solutions or any doesn't try to give us a judgment about any of it. You know, it just gives us a bunch of stuff, and you know, the right thing happens for, in theory, the wrong reasons. And so does that justify it? And I like that the episode gives it that much space, you know, that it really is not that it just doesn't try to have an answer for us. And so I remember really being like touched by it when it originally aired. And I won't say I was disappointed by it this time around, but it was definitely more heavy handed than I remember.
It's not as if we're redone in today's kind of standards, it would be much more nuanced. I feel like the Captain Picard plays the role of like, hey, let me stop the plot and explain to you what's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
And Patrick Stewart is an amazing actor, so he does it very well. But I do feel, I agree with you, it's a little clumsy in that he basically says, okay, here are the stakes. Here are the choices that everyone is making and what it means and how it can impact stuff. Right. Carry on.
You know, I feel it does have some echoes in Discovery. Here's a spoiler for season 2 of Discovery. In bringing Dr. Culber back from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Culber himself as a character, I think, struggles in a very interesting way with having not been alive and then being alive again, you know, or having been off in the, you know, mycelium network or whatever you want to call it.
Amongst the fungus.
Yeah, the mushroom land. He was in mushroom land. But like, I found that story so compelling and that thread of season 2 so compelling. And I think that like that story and this story are really us looking at the evolution of the way we tell stories on television over the past 25 years.
I agree, because that story, they laid the groundwork for that story through a number of arcs throughout the first and second season. And so you kind of understand that character and where he's going. And I don't know if they had planned it like that, but certainly once they assembled the parts, they figured out what to do with it. And so it has a much more emotional impact. Whereas this, by nature of the episodic nature of TNG, it has to be, it starts and is solved in 42 minutes. That's it.
Right. Right. And I mean, those were the rules of television. And I think that's where they resonate so much for me, the original cast movies, because they were explicitly growth for the characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were the characters struggling with things. Kirk has a very strong arc across the films, with a little pit stop in number 4, where everybody just gets to have fun for a while after some heavy stuff went down. Mm-hmm. But like, I love that, you know, the Kirk struggle with his son and the Klingons. Like, I think that's a compelling development for the character. And by the time you get to Star Trek VI and Kirk is like, you know, kind of crusty and set in his ways, it's like, you can see why. You can see all the things that happened to him to get him there. And you could not do that on this kind of television series.
No, it wouldn't work, which is a shame. But I love TNG for what it is, not what it could be.
Well, that's exactly it, right?
That's what you have to do. I love the characters. It's my wife once, when I asked her many years ago, hey, do you mind if I watch an episode of TNG? She says, of course not. Every time I watch an episode of TNG, I feel like I'm visiting my friends. And I thought, that's a really good way of summarizing kind of my feelings towards TNG. It's like a warm hug. From Worf.
That's really nice.
Yeah, I thought so. You know what else has been really nice? This conversation with you, Aaron.
Oh, well, thanks. I have enjoyed it. I'm sitting out on my back porch in the sunset while we were talking. And at first I was like, oh, this is so pretty. And now I'm like, this is dark. I can't read my notes.
And I'm just sitting here in the dark crying, as I always do at this time. So.
That's how you end every podcast, is with tears.
Tears, just quiet sobs.
Don't be sad that it's over. Be happy that it happened, or whatever the thing is.